Paul Taff was head of National Educational Television's children's programming, and he was the one who chose us to do this program for Eastern Educational Network, and he put together some stations. They ran out of money and weren't able to produce any more programs. There were a group of women, mothers, in Boston who heard that we might be going off the air. They marched door to door to get people to make contributions to the Children's Programming Fund. They said that it was essential to keep these programs on the air. Clear over in Chicago, people got word that that was happening in Boston, this Mother's March for the neighborhood. It came to the attention of Bill McCurdy, who was president of the Sears Foundation at that time. He had been talking with NET about sponsoring something, underwriting something, never thinking that they might be interested in children's programs. So he got in touch with Paul Taff and he said, what's this neighborhood program about? I understand it needs funding. And Paul said, yes. And Bill McCurdy said, well, why don't we try that? If we're going to launch into public broadcasting, why don't we try that one? And Paul Taff said, well, that would be wonderful. And so Bill McCurdy said, how much do you need? And Paul Taff told him, and he went to the Sears Foundation. They said, sure. So they started building a network, and that was the beginning of our network programming in this country. You see, it's always thanks to people. If it hadn't been for those mothers, and if it hadn't been for the good graces of the newspapers who wrote about those mothers, people in Chicago would have never heard about it. But they did. And that's how it all began. And the Sears Foundation supported the neighborhood for 20 years.
In 1975, the production ceased temporarily.
That what?
The production of Mr. Rogers ceased for 4 years. Is that true?
I don't remember. Okay. Now, David will know. You'll have lots of people who can give you the facts.
Okay. How many shows do you currently do?
We've been doing 15, which would be 3 new weeks each year to add to the library. How many programs do we have? 750 or 800? So if a child should watch a program, it takes, what, 250 programs a year broadcast? About that. If a child watched a program today, he or she might not see that program for two more years. So there are a lot of programs.
Are there programs that you wouldn't want to re-air?
Well, there's one we have to do over right now, as a matter of fact. Somebody gave me this cute little flashlight, at least I thought it was. Turns out it's a laser pointer. And somebody wrote to us and said, do you realize that that could be harmful to people's eyes? Well, it turns out it's not harmful to people's eyes, but what it is harmful is that there must be laser things like that on guns that show where to shoot. Anyway, the truck of all that is that I'm going to have to do those two scenes over the next time we go into the studio, because I don't want people thinking that we want to hurt anybody.
Has the show been broadcast outside of this country?
Well, people in Canada have gotten them. The Armed Forces Network shows them all over the world. I was in a restaurant one time, and this man came up to me and said, "You speak very good Chinese." And I said, "Oh, I wish I did." And he said, "Well, Chinese that come out of your mouth is very good." And I said, "Well, where did you see it?" And he said, "In Taiwan." Well, they had been taking the neighborhood, or just kind of pirating it from the satellite, and then putting somebody else's voice in our mouths. And you know me, I'm glad if people can use it, but I want to be sure that what's coming out is what I said originally.
Yeah. Did you check it out?
They did check it out, and I think that that PBS didn't allow it. But boy, if people want to use our work, wow, I'm all for that. But you know, stick to our premise.
Talk a little bit about your trip to the Soviet Union in 1987.
Well, there's a woman in the Soviet Union who did a program. Her name was Tatiana Vedneva. She did a program called It was translated "Good Night, Little Ones." How did they say it? Malashi was "Little Ones." Any rate, maybe it'll come to me. But she invited me to be a guest on her program. And I said that I'd be glad to come if she would return the favor. And she said, okay. So I went over and I was a guest with her. And we took a film crew and showed that whole visit and all around Moscow. And then when she came here, she was just lovely. She'd never been to the United States before. And Spokojnej noci, Malashi. I was hoping it would come. Spokojnej noci, Malashi. Good night, little ones. So that was when it was called the Soviet Union. And so we wanted to rebroadcast those programs recently, and so what we did was to redub my voice saying Russia when I was saying the Soviet Union. So we tried to keep that in the library, the working library.
Talk about family communications and how that started.
Well, it started with my face on the side of a milk carton. I woke up one morning and noted I was an employee of WQED up until then. And I woke up and here was the milk at the door, and my picture was on the milk carton, and I didn't know anything about it. And I was advertising something that, or promoting something that the station had just, you know, didn't bother to ask me. And I thought, well, I think that now's the time for us to have our own nonprofit corporation. So much of the money that was coming to make the neighborhood was being used for administration that I felt that we could be better stewards with that money if it came directly to us. And so we formed Family Communications Incorporated in 1970, and we rented, from then on, we rented our offices and the studios and all of the other facilities that we needed at WQED. And it's turned out to be fine. I mean, we're tenants, if you will, rather than employees. And so all of the neighborhoods come under Family Communications. We have the copyrights to all of the neighborhoods. And all of the other projects that we do, such as the Safe Havens project and the What Do You Do With the Mad That You Feel project. And these are projects that others can tell you a lot more about than I. But they're training projects for teachers mainly.
What about some of the other productions the company has done? Old Friends, New Friends in 78?
Mm-hmm. Old Friends, New Friends was a series that I just wanted to talk with people that I thought were interesting. And we visited a lot of different people all over the country. I enjoy talking with people. I'd much rather listen, as I've told you. And so I felt that it was engaging anyway. And then we did the Heroes programs, Mr. Rogers Heroes, in which I talked with people who I thought were doing important things with children and for children. They should be in the archives somewhere, at least some of them.
This isn't about Family Communications, but you appeared on Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman.
Yes.
As a guest. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, Beth Sullivan and my wife met at some awards ceremony. I wasn't able to go. It was in California. And Joanne said, well, I'll go. And so Beth was there getting an award for Dr. Quinn, and Joanne was going to get one for the neighborhood. And she went over to Beth and said, you know, your program's the only one Fred will watch. And Beth said, do you think he might be a guest on the program? And she said, you could always ask him. He hasn't done that before, but you could always ask him. We've become great friends. Beth Sullivan is a wonderful producer. Her standards are very high. And Joanne and I are the honorary grandparents of their twins. So there need to be more Beth Sullivans in this industry. More people who really care about producing programs of value. When she heard that CBS was going to cancel Dr. Quinn, she asked why, because they were leading the the percentages or something of the evening. And Mr. Moonves simply said, I want urban, male, and young, and Dr. Quinn is not any one of those three.
What was your role in that show? What did she have for you?
I was the minister's teacher who came for a visit. There's a minister on the program who ends up being blind, as a matter of fact. But in this particular program, his old mentor comes, and that was I. They were wonderful people, oh my. But talk about taking a long time to make a little bit of time. It took the whole day to make 5 minutes.
You often, when you're speaking, you ask people to take 10 seconds and think about the people that helped them along the way. Mm-hmm. What kind of reactions have you gotten from that?
Just wonderful. I think silence is one of the greatest gifts that we have. You know, here I've been talking with you for hours, and I think that if I would just stop, there would be a chance for people to think, what's going on? And maybe go deeper within themselves. I started this gift of silence in a commencement speech, I believe, quite a while ago. And at one time, when I was at the White House for the conference on children and television, they asked me to make a presentation, and I did. And both Both the Clintons and both the Gores were there, and well, almost everybody in children's broadcasting. And I, at that time, gave a whole minute of silence. And after that meeting was over, I was walking out, and one of the guards, you know, the military guards at the White House, all in white and gold, one of the guards came up to me and said, "Thank you, Mr. Rogers." And I said, "Well, for what?" And he said, "For that silence." And I said, "Well, who did you think about?" Because I said, "Please take a minute to think about those who have helped you become who you are." He said, "I thought about my grandfather's brother, who just before he died took me to his basement and gave me his fishing pole." He said, "I hadn't thought about him in a long time, but I love fishing, and I know that must have come from him. So maybe you'll have some nice blank tape for whoever's doing research to take some time to think about those who have cared so deeply for you that you're really nourished in this whole life because of knowing them."
Who do you think about?
Well, it's not unlikely that I would think about my grandfather McFeely and my grandmother and my parents and Jim Stumbaugh and then those who are still living. The people that I work with. You know, when I pray in the morning, there's such a long list of people. It would probably take 3 legal pads of paper, single-spaced, to tell you all the people who mean so much to me in this world and in the world beyond. I pray for their spirits. I've been thinking about Jack Hines a lot since this Kennedy accident, because he was killed in an airplane accident too, a bizarre accident in which a helicopter was trying to do something to the bottom of his plane in flight, and his plane crashed. You ask about the beginnings of Family Communications. He was on our very first board and loved the work that we did. We have a wonderful board of directors now and always have had. But I don't know what it is about loss and the memory of loss that can help people go deeper and deeper within themselves. I guess it's because nobody is immune to loss. And, you know, I've had people walk up to me after we taped that segment in New York with Maya Lin. I was walking down the street in Manhattan and people would walk up to me and just not even stopping, just would say such things as, "Thank you for my childhood." It is such a fabulous thing to walk through this life with this face. the things that people have such trust that I will respond in a caring way, that, well, how can I say how grateful I am for what I've been able to do and be? How can I ever express my gratitude enough?
But then again, people trust you because you come through, so it's a two-way street.
Well, it's a gift. And we all have different gifts. And I do believe that saying thank you is one of the greatest things that people can do. And I worry about those who don't feel the necessity of giving thanks, that isn't important. I think it's one of the most important things that there is. Eucharistis in Greek is thanksgiving. And I'd like to thank you for what you're making available to people for years and years to come. If anybody wants to study this field, they'll have just a marvelous resource in your archives. Something had to prompt you to invest so much of yourself in this project. And to be able to recognize that and to give thanks for it, well, I'd just like you to know that I do.
Thank you. What has been your greatest challenge?
Greatest challenge. I suppose to walk through the door and sing "It's a Beautiful Day in This Neighborhood" when I have had a real sadness in my life. I had to go to Miami 1 hour after my father's funeral because they were having an MR day there that they said could not be canceled. This was a personal appearance. And I'll never forget that we had 23 15-minute performances in one day. And I had to sing "It's a Beautiful Day in This Neighborhood" for each one of them. And I remember telling Johnny, I said, "I'll try." Johnny Costa was there. And the first time I started, just before he was playing the music, I just started to bawl. And by the time he had finished the introduction, yeah, my eyes were wet, but I went out on the place and started singing "It's a Beautiful Day in This Neighborhood" and did it for every one of those 15-minute things the whole day long and got through it and listened to what the kids had to say. One child put up his hand and said, "Mr. Rogers, I just wear diapers at night now." That was a very big step in that child's life. And I knew, you know, I knew that Dad was in a good place, and it was just that, well, your question made me remember that. So that was one of the hardest times. But when you know that you can make a difference in somebody's life, and you may want to know how I answered that child who said that to me. I said, well, it'll be up to you when you give them up at night. And the people in the room, I remember, at first they snickered. And I told the kid what an important thing he had shared with me. And then I said, it'll be up to you when you give them up at night.
How important is it as an adult to be in touch with your childhood?
I think it's very important, especially if you want to be communicating with children. I think it's essential.
And how would you compare Mr. Rogers to some of your contemporaries? Captain Kangaroo, Mr. Wizard.
Bob Keeshan, who was Captain Kangaroo, and I have been in touch for many, many years. In fact, I was on his program and he was on ours, I believe, a long time ago. But I call him every New Year's Day and we go over our lives for the past year. He is a great advocate for children. And the speeches that he gives, and I'm very impressed with what he means to children. He's on that national board of the American Academy of Pediatrics, and so is Bill Eisler, who is our president here at Family Communications. I don't know how to compare our programs. I really don't. I think each one reflects who we are, and that's the good thing. That's the only way you can have variety, since each one of us is who we are and unique.
What is television's responsibility to children?
To give them everything that we possibly can to help them grow in healthy ways. And help them to recognize that they can be angry and not have to hurt themselves or anybody else, that they can have the full range of feelings and express them in very healthy, positive ways.